On this episode, we lay out all the pieces of the Indonesian political Rubik's Cube and put them together. We cover all the important elements of the 2018 regional elections, the political party dynamics, the political battles for the House seats in 2019, which parties are set to become extinct, as well as the Widodo Prabowo contest for the presidency. It's a full episode, and this is the go-to guide for understanding Indonesian politics. Welcome to Indonesia In Depth. My name is Sean Corrigan. Today we're privileged to have a very interesting guest. Our guest is Dr. Jayadi Hanan. Dr. Jayadi is the Executive Director of Saiful Mujani Research and Consulting, or SMRC, which is one of the most, if not the most, credible polling and political research firm in Indonesia. SMRC has done some very interesting opinion polls. Dr. Jayadi is the lecturer and director of political science research at the Paramedina University here in Jakarta. He has received his doctoral degree from Ohio State University and was a research fellow at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. He appears frequently on TV news talk shows and is one of the most sought-after Indonesian political experts, particularly when it comes to gaining insights on the political situation on the ground across the country. Dr. Jayadi, thank you for being on Indonesia In Depth.
Thank you for having me.
There are so many political developments to discuss with you, so I'd like to get right to it. I hear that you will have a national survey coming out towards the end of May, early June. Could you tell us a little bit about it, and what will it cover?
Well, we usually have around 3 to 4 national tracking surveys every year. The first one we have published in January. And now we are trying to do the second one, which probably will be done by the end of May. And with regard to things we are going to cover, it will be related basically on what is the approval rating of the president, what is the current political support for the candidates for the president, current political support for the political parties, which are going to compete in 2019 national presidential and legislative elections, and all of the things related to factors that affect the people or voters' behavior in deciding their votes in general. So those are our main focus in our national surveys usually. I think by the end of May we will know the possibility of who's going to be the main opponent of Jokowi, and then what is the chances of their electoral support, and will there be any surprise, and so on and so forth.
So that will be released later this month, and it will be public? It will be on your website?
Probably, yeah. Not later this month. Maybe on June, we will have the latest release about our national tracking surveys, yeah.
Okay, so listeners should definitely check out your website, saifulmujani.com. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. So we'll look forward to that. It's going to be really important, and it's going to be a very good poll, I'm sure. Later this year, on June 27th, actually, Indonesia will be holding 171 regional elections. Mm-hmm. That will include, of course, many key regions, such as West Java, Central Java, East Java, and of course, North Sumatra, and many others. Mm-hmm. These are huge political battlegrounds. West Java alone, for example, is massive, and mm-hmm. I think it has almost 32 million voters. Is that
West
correct?
West Java, 33 million.
Yeah, 33 million. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge voter base
The biggest number in terms of the electoral, in terms of the voters, compared to other areas.
I find these elections and these political coalitions behind them, mm-hmm. It's very fascinating. Another interesting point is that these elections will only use one round to determine the winner. Is that correct?
Yeah, usually that is correct. The Indonesian law on regional elections or local elections, both at the provincial and also at the district and municipality levels. All of those elections are under the provision of the law of regional election in general. The law regulates, according to the provision in the law, that any parties, any candidate that can win plurality in the election, then they will be announced as the winner. So there is no requirement for having, let's say, at least 30% of the vote, like the previous law, or there is no also for having more than 50% of the votes, like in Jakarta. Whoever got the most, he will win. Even if the difference between the first one and the second only about less than 1%, for instance. Yeah. So true, according to our law, in this 171 local elections in 2018, there will be only one round election in each and every one of these elections. The election that has two rounds only in Jakarta, because compared to other regions, elections in Jakarta is regulated by another law specifically for Jakarta, which says that the winner of Jakarta's governor election should be the one who can get at least 50% more of the vote.
So the 2019 presidential election will also be winner takes all?
Well, 2019 presidential election is concurrently held together with the legislative elections. For presidential election, we will have two round majority runoff election, just like in Jakarta. Because according to our constitutions, the president-elect should be the one who can win at least 50% and more of the votes. And also the votes that he got should be at least 20% in at least 50% of the total provinces of Indonesia. Meaning that the candidate who can win the presidential election, let's say he has got the 50% more of the votes, but there is another requirement. That means his vote should be spread into at least 17 provinces in Indonesia, and in each of these 17 provinces, the president-elect vote should be at least 20%. If not, then we will have another election.
Wow, it's fascinating. Yeah, I didn't know that. So there's the other requirement.
Yeah. I think the constitutions tries to make sure that our president-elect is the one who not only got the majority of the votes, but also the votes that support him should be spread out enough all over Indonesia to make sure that the president is not a regional president. He should be the real Indonesian president, meaning that the president of all over Indonesia, which consisting of 34 provinces, 17,000 islands, and so on and so forth. So that is, I think, one of the basic objective of having that kind of requirements in our presidential election. But yes, the basic rules for presidential election is the so-called majority runoff elections. But I think I have to inform also that in 2019, the presidential election is held together or concurrently with legislative elections. The legislative elections is using the so-called multi-member district system. So there will be three levels of House of Representative membership that will be elected in 2019 election. Number one is for National House of Representative members, consisting of 575 members. That is for the national parliament. And then at the second level, we will elect also the members for the provincial level of Indonesian parliament or Indonesian local House of Representative. And then the last one, we will have to elect the members for the district and cities level of House of Representative, or you can call local councils. Besides that, we will also have to elect the members for this, the kind of Senate. If we compare to the US, Senate with the regulation that each province will be represented by 4 senators. That means we will elect 136 senators for 2019 Senate election. So the voters in 2019 national election will cast 5 ballots. Ballots for the presidential election, ballot for a national Senate, ballots for national House of Representatives, and then 2 ballots for provincial level and district and city levels of House of Representatives. Yeah, it's quite complex.
Yeah, Vice President Yusuf Kala said this afternoon, he described the 2019 election as one of the most complicated
I agree. Of them. If you look at the sheer number of the people who will be involved in Indonesian national election of 2019, we can count on our head. One, we have to elect 575 members of the national parliament. We have to elect one pair of presidents, right, and vice president. And then we will have to elect 136 senators. And after that, we will have to elect more than 20,000 members of local councils, both at the provincial level and the levels below province. It will involve around 500,000 polling stations. Wow. All over Indonesia, which will be managed by not less than 4 million election officials on one day, from the very west part of Indonesia all the way to the eastern part of Indonesia. And also, I have to mention also the voters. It is estimated that the voters of Indonesia in 2019 will be around 195 million. So if the voter turnout, the voters turnout will be around 80%, that means we will have around 165 million people. All of them are going to the polling stations during roughly the same time on the 17th of April 2019. That is quite complex.
So you expect around 80% turnout?
Yes.
What was last, 2014?
The 2014, the voter turnout is around 78. So I think it is reasonable to expect around 80%. The reason is because, you know, when there is a presidential election, people usually are more enthusiastic in going to the election, especially when the people think that the race will be close or the race will be very, very competitive, just like in 2014 presidential election.
One of the reasons, main reasons for having the simultaneous election was about cost saving, is that correct?
Yeah, cost saving is one of them. The other, I think, is the people think that according to constitutions, the election should be held together. That is according to our constitutional court. So that is the reason. Some people said that it will be good for the work of presidential system in Indonesia, because by having presidential election and legislative election at the same time, then there will be the so-called coattail effect, in which people expect that because the number of the presidential candidates will be not very many, then with coattail effect, people are expecting that the political parties that will be entering the national parliament for 2019 will be not so many, despite the fact that the participants or the political parties that are competing in the election are more than 16 now. Yeah. So that is some of the consideration. But I think the main consideration is constitutional.
Sampaikan kepada semua orang, haram memilih orang kafir sebagai pemimpin. Mau? Sanggup?
Sanggup.
Bersedia?
Bersedia.
Bersedia?
Bersedia.
Untuk menyampaikan haram orang kafir sebagai pemimpin? Haram. Yang siap takbir?
That was a voice of an unknown speaker at the 2016 Hizbut Tahrir demonstration against the then governor of Jakarta, Basuki Purnama, or Ahok. The speaker said, quote, "You have to let everyone know that it is forbidden to elect a non-believer or infidel as your leader," unquote. Just want to shift back just very briefly to the regional elections later on this year, in June. After last year's Jakarta gubernatorial election, where we saw the use of ethnicity and religion or political Islam used against the incumbent, Basuki Purnama, some observers feel or feared that we will see a repeat of this going on in the regional elections. However, SMRC did a study in January this year, and your results showed that there hasn't been much evidence of this.
Yeah.
Does that still stand, knowing that we are 4 months later and in the middle of the campaign? How do you see that happening?
Yeah,
has it changed at all?
No, there's no change so much. I think we still find the same or similar things. I think the reason is a bit fundamental. Yeah. Well, I am of the opinion that identity politics, you mentioned about political Islam, ethnicity, and so on and so forth, that are played out in the political competition in regional elections, which is in Indonesia, it is also called identity politics. This type of politics has been played out actually for quite a long time. The reason is very natural because Indonesia is very diverse, both in terms of ethnicity, religion, and so on and so forth. So the political competitor or the candidates who are competing in the election will find any types of issues that can be used or useful for them to try to be competitive and if possible to beat the competitor, right? And identity is one of them, especially religion and ethnicity, because religion and ethnicity are two things that are very, very inseparable from Indonesian people, especially religion. When you are talking about religion, religion seems to be something very emotional, very, very psychologically attached to anybody, and so on and so forth. So using this kind of issues as the political, let's say, political weapon will be very useful, but depends on the context and the situation, right? I think there are two conditions for the identity politics to be significantly affecting the result. Number one is just like in Jakarta's election, local election of 2017. Number one, the competition among the competitors should be very, very competitive, meaning that there is no certain candidate that has very dominant support or the other is trailing very much from the front runner and so on and so forth. In other words, if the election is close, then there is a possibility of the identity politic to be played out. In other words, the level of competitiveness should be very, very, very close. Number two, the requirement of having identity politics to be significantly affecting the result is there has to be deep polarization among the candidates. For instance, let's take example again, Jakarta election. Especially in the second round of the Jakarta's 2017 elections, we could see very clear, very deep polarization among the candidates. One candidate is representing minority in terms of ethnicity and also minority in terms of religion, while the other candidate is representing majority in terms of ethnicity and also religion. The election is also very close at the time. So the use of the ethnicity and religion then is very, very useful. Now, if we try to look at the possibility of the replication of this types of identity politics in Jakarta to 171 local elections in 2018, then we have to also find, is there any context of those two requirements? Number one is the competitiveness of the election. Number two, deep polarization among candidates. Yeah, if we look at there are 17 provincial level election 2018. Most of them are not having the so-called incumbents competing in the election. Usually, if there is no incumbent in the election, then the possibility of having competitive, very close race is there. So the requirement number one is there for local identity, for identity politics like in Jakarta to be played out. But let's move to the second requirement. The second requirement is there any deep polarization among candidates? For instance, between Islam candidate and non-Muslim candidate and non-Muslim candidate. And also among the political parties that support the candidate. Is there any deep polarization, just like in Jakarta? For the second requirement, I myself do not find it so far. So 2018 local elections is lacking the second requirement of the context for identity politics to be played out. That's why I think, although currently when we are doing this interview, we have been in the middle of the campaign of 2018 local elections, I don't hear any significant event where in certain regional elections, identity politics, especially religion and ethnicity, is played out very, very significantly. Of course, there are some events like that, but I don't think it is played out to the extent just like in Jakarta 2017 local elections. There is one that is being possibility of having identity politics. That is the elections in West Java.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in West Java, we have four candidates. All of them are Muslim. Both the governor's candidate and also the vice governor's candidate. So there are no deep polarizations among the candidates. But there is the level of competitiveness is there. No, none of these candidates are very, very dominant in terms of their political support. So there is a competitiveness, but the deep polarization is not there. So that's why you hear until 4 months after the official campaign is started, we don't hear any significant event which says that identity politics, especially religion, is played out in West Java, just like in other areas. We don't hear so far. The other reason why we don't hear significant identity politics so far in 2000 local election, beside the lack of the requirement for the context, as mm-hmm. I mentioned, also I think I see a kind of, let's say, political maneuvers among political parties in terms of making the coalitions for nominating the candidates in local elections. It seems to me that there is a deliberate effort of especially the political parties that are currently supporting Jokowi. There are 7 of them. They are trying to be spreading out
mm-hmm.
to many candidates. They are not trying to be in only one group in each of these elections. So you will find that in East Java, for instance, PDIP and Golkar is in one coalition for national government, for Jokowi, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
But in East Java, they yeah. are against each
mm-hmm.
other.
Mm-hmm. It's PDIP with Gerindra yeah, right. at some points, yeah.
Yeah, the PDIP is even in coalition with the opposition party in terms of the national politics. So those kind of mixed election can be found all over Indonesia, which means that we cannot differentiate the political parties or the coalition of political parties in local elections that are deeply polarized, like in Jakarta's election.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, then we don't find, I think it is difficult to play out identity politics in 2018 local elections. We'll see.
So it's been healthy competition for the past 4 months.
That's what I heard, yeah.
And it looks like it'll keep going until
right.
the election. That's
right.
That's good.
Right.
It's going to be fascinating
right.
to see how it plays out.
True.
Because
yeah. we don't find any context that can be fertile ground
mm-hmm.
for identity politics to be played out.
How do you see the impact of these regional elections this year towards mm-hmm. the 2019 general and presidential election?
Mm-hmm.
Are there things we should be looking out for in certain mm-hmm. areas or certain coalitions
yeah.
or what stands out?
The general rules, I think, is that the local politics is usually not in line with the national politics. That is the general rules that we have been seeing since 2004 when we have both direct election for national level and also local level. So you cannot find any significant correlation or connection between what happens in the local politics in the coalition, for instance, political coalitions, with the dynamics of national politics. What happens in the coalitions of 2018 local election, for instance, you see that the opposition at the national level and the government at the national level are very often in coalition with each other at the local levels.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the candidates in the local elections are nominated by more than two political parties. And these two political parties, we cannot differentiate very clearly. We cannot differentiate, separate them into two groups very clearly. For instance, this is the group of Jokowi's or the national government. This is the group of opposition from the national all the way to the local level. We don't find it. So they mix each other. Mm-hmm. So that means that we cannot have a very easy conclusion. We cannot draw easy conclusion mm-hmm. about the impact of these local elections to the national election in 2019, meaning that we have to see 2019 election with its own dynamic among political parties and among the candidates for the president.
Can you break down specifically West Java, Central Java, and East Java? And how, explain a little bit about how important they are to the electorate.
Local election in several areas will be very important, if not significant, for the national politics. At least the election in four areas. Mm-hmm. Number one, in West Java. Why this is important? West Java has been a long time as considered as one of the barometer of Indonesian national politics. The people who wins West Java usually win the national election. And West Java's voters are very, very volatile. They are very, very liquid. They can go anywhere, usually. So, and in 2014, the current national governor, the incumbent of the president, was losing to his opponent. The local election in West Java is won by the candidate that is considered closer to the incumbent president, then there is a sign of the president to have even more support nationally. If not, then the incumbent president, Jokowi in this case, will have a bit of struggle in getting re-elected as the president. That is West Java. The second is West Sumatra. The reason, because West Sumatra is the stronghold of the opponent of the incumbent. So I think if the election in West Sumatra is won by the opponent of the current president, then there is a possibility of this West Sumatra to be the stronghold for the opponent for the opposition again. And similar to West Sumatra is West Nusa Tenggara. The province of Nusa Tenggara, which has been the stronghold of the opponent of the incumbent president. It seems to me that there is a possibility of West Nusa Tenggara, the seat for governorship will not necessarily be taken again by the candidate who is closer to the current governor, who was not supporting Jokowi in 2014 elections. So those three areas will be very important, I think, in determining the national politics, especially on those areas in 2019 elections. In addition to that, there is one area that needs to be watched, that is the Central Java. Central Java can be considered as one of the barometer for how strong is Jokowi and PDIP. Mm-hmm. If in Central Java, the candidates of PDIP, which is the political party of the current president, if that candidate can win big, then that means nationally, the position of PDIP, the current Jokowi's political party, will also be strong enough nationally. So other areas, I think, not so much in terms of its impact on the political dynamic of 2019 mm-hmm. elections.
Mm-hmm. So there are some cases, as you mentioned,
yes,
some
yes.
few select areas, very mm-hmm. important areas where you can have some takeaways.
Yes.
But just on West Java, currently President Widodo is leading in polls there.
Yes, yes. Our poll shows that in West Java, the president is no longer trailing to Prabowo, and it is, I think, a good news for the president, but of course bad news for Prabowo's camp. The other indication for that also, Prabowo's coalition is having their own candidates there. The coalition of Gerindra Party and PKS, they have their own candidates. And according to the poll so far, the candidates from these political parties is trailing very much in West Java's elections. So that means that there is a possibility of, if the candidates from Gerindra Party, the opposition party, and PKS could not win this election, then there is a possibility of the incumbent president to win West Java voters in 2019 national election.
Wow, that's very fascinating. So it's going to be important to watch to see how it all plays out in the next, just over a month now, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, when we talk about 2019, everyone automatically thinks, you know, or wonders who's going to be the next president, who will win.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other factors that are really important, especially in this coming election 2019.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the new 4% parliamentary threshold.
Yeah.
The 2017 election law increased the parliamentary threshold to 4%
mm-hmm.
of the total national votes.
Mm-hmm.
This means that political parties that fail to reach this number won't earn any seats in the House.
Yes.
And as a reminder to our listeners, the threshold for the parties to put forth a presidential candidate is 20% of House seats. And this is completely separate from what we're discussing now. And we're only talking about the parliamentary threshold.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The House, correct me if I'm wrong, but the House threshold in 2008 was 2.5%.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then was raised in 2012 to 3.5%.
2009 to 2005. 2.5, and then 2014, 3.5.
Okay, 2014, 3.5,
yes.
And now 4% for
2019, yeah.
And this is really significant, as we had 10 parties competing in 2014 election,
yes.
Is that correct?
There are 12.
It was 12, okay.
Yeah. 10 could make their way through the parliament.
I see, okay. So two could make it.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
I see. In this next election in 2019, we could potentially see...
There will be 16.
There'll be 16.
Political parties competing for national seats. Yeah.
16.
Yeah.
But there's a potential that 7 or 8 parties may not make it through the threshold. Is that correct?
True. There is a potential potency for some political parties cannot make... Even the ones who have been in the parliament now, they are not safe enough as we are speaking today to be entering the parliament again because of that parliamentary threshold. In 2014, there were 12 political parties competing for the national seats in the parliament. Two of them could not make it because these two could not reach the parliamentary threshold of 3.5% of the total national votes, meaning that there are 10 political parties currently holding seats in the national parliament of Indonesia. Now, if we look at these 10 political parties, both in terms of their seats in the parliament and also in terms of the total votes, in terms of the seats, both in terms of the seats that they have in the national parliament and also in terms of the total number of popular votes that they got in 2014, none of these 10 political parties got less than 4% of the seats and also of popular votes. So Hanura, for instance, they got more than 4%, and then Nasdem got like 6%. So none of them got less than 4. Meaning that if you look at those numbers, then there is a possibility of all of these 10 political parties could re-enter the parliament because all of them, if we compare to their seats and their votes in 2014, all of them got more than 4%. If there is no significant changes in the attitude of the electorate, then all of them will enter the parliament again. The problem is there are 6 new political competitors in 2019 elections. That means at least the political parties that are now having less than 7% of the votes of 2014 are, I think, in danger of being replaced by new political parties or new political competitors. Or all of them could not get.
It'd be all scattered.
Because the votes will be scattered. Yeah. So there is a big potential political parties couldn't make it, meaning that there is a potential of us reducing the number of political parties in the parliament because of this parliamentary threshold alone, and also because of the number of political competitors are now more than 2014, and also because in general Indonesian support for political parties are scattered, fragmented. None of the political parties are very, very dominant in terms of their political support. For instance, PDIP, the winner in 2014, only got 18.9%. Even, you know, it's much, much less than simple majority, right? Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Number two, I think, again, 2019 election will be held concurrently with legislative elections. So there is a possibility if the incumbent is having very good approval rating by the public, and that's why then having very good political support from the public, then this political support for the incumbent president will benefit his political parties, in this case PDIP, meaning that there is a potential for PDIP to get much, much more than 2014 election. That means, on the one hand, for other political parties that are not part of Jokowi's political parties, the support are scattered, the votes are scattered, meaning that maybe many of them will be not able to enter the parliament. At the same time, PDIP can pull out the popular votes from other political parties, meaning that on the one hand, there is a possibility of PDIP to be very strong, and on the other hand, there is a possibility of many political parties getting smaller and smaller. So, because of that, then there will be only few political parties can pass that 4% parliamentary threshold. There is a possibility like that. So, it is still very highly uncertain until today. If we look at political parties of 2014 in the parliament compared to political parties of 2009 in the parliament, the number is more. In 2009, we have only 9 political parties entering the parliament. At the time, our threshold was only 2.5%. But then for 2014 election, we increased the threshold from 2.5 to 3.5. The result is the number of political party is not reduced. It even more. We have from 9 to 10. So there is also still a possibility of at least the number of political parties, although we have higher level of parliamentary threshold, then the number of political parties will not be reduced. That is, I think at this point, it is very, very highly uncertain.
But the possibility is that it could be less than 10. It could be 7. I mean, it's unclear, it's unknown, right. But the potential is there.
There is potential for it.
And some of the parties that are in the danger zone, according to some of the data that I've seen, are the National Mandate Party, PAN, the Prosperous Justice Party, which is PKS, National Democrats, which is NASDEM, the United Development Party, which is PPP, and the People's Conscious Party, which is Hanura.
Hanura.
It seems that NASDEM is on the border of the threshold, maybe. And PKS really needs to work hard to make sure they can meet the threshold. But Hanura, PAN, and PPP are in the most trouble from the current data, it appears. Yeah. Is that accurate?
If you only look at the number in the poll, yes, your observation is correct. But I think there is another dimension we have to put here to look at the possibility of political parties to be entering the parliament or not. We have to look at whether or not that political party is having the so-called social identity or solid base support. Let's say the social identity. What social identity means that there are political parties in Indonesia that is linked very close to a big and strong social movement and social organizations. For instance, PKB. PKB is having very close relationship with a very strong Nahdlatul Ulama, the traditionalist Muslim organizations, which is having a very solid support. So PKB, in that case, will have more than 4% solid support. PKS also, although according to the number in the poll, is having less than 4%, but PKS is one of the political party which has a very solid support. And in our calculation, the solid support that is had by PKS is, I think, more than 4%. So I think looking at that, they are safe enough. Similar thing for National Mandate Party. National Mandate Party is the party that is closely linked to the National Movement of Muhammadiyah, the modernist Muslim organizations, which has more than 4% solid support, political membership, and that's why it becomes a very solid support for a National Mandate Party. If we look at that, then those three parties should be safe enough to be entering the parliament by looking at that consideration. I think the ones that in danger are the political parties that small enough, but they are catch-all parties. The parties that doesn't have a strong social basis, like Nasdem, Hanura, Nasdem, the so-called National Democrat Party, and also People Consign Party. These kind of political parties do not have a certain social basis mm-hmm. that can be reliable for them to make sure that they will have at least a certain percent of the vote. So they are the ones in danger, I think, in 2019 elections. If we look at that, then we have to say there are at least two political parties that are in danger: National Democrat Party and also People Consign Party. If their supports are taken out by new political parties, then I think two possibilities will happen. Number one, new political parties cannot attract mm-hmm. enough level of support, 4%, and all of them will have less than 4%, meaning that all of them will be gone from, will not be able to enter the parliament. So again, if we look at that calculation, if my calculation is right, so there is a possibility of us having only eight political parties in 2019 election, or seven if we count the PPP. PPP is similar to PKB, although PPP is not very closely related to social basis of Indonesian traditionalist Muslim organization, the Nahdlatul Ulama. But most of their supporters are coming from the Nahdlatul Ulama, similar to PKB. If they can maintain the support from this social basis, then they can be safe. But if many of their social basis are going to the other similar political parties, PKB, then PPP also is in danger mm-hmm. of going out of the parliament. So there are a possibility of having 7 to 8 political parties because of this.
If there are seven parties, well, what's the impact to the parliament? Will it be more productive? Will it help it be more productive? Or will it stay the same? Or
In terms of the coalition, I think because the number of coalition will be less, right? So theoretically speaking, if you have less number of political coalition, then it will be less negotiation you have mm-hmm. to do, less deal you have to make, right? In that means that there is a possibility of making more efficient types of political decision in the coalition and opposition. Number two, there is possibility also that one or two political parties are dominant enough. If there is one or two political parties that are dominant enough, then the bargaining power for making political decisions, both in terms of the coalition and in terms of the opposition, will be also easier, I think. So we can expect, politically speaking, with less number of political parties in the parliament, at least political negotiations will be more efficient. But other work should be based on the institutional arrangement of the national parliament and how the national parliament is managing relationship with the president.
Dunia politik memang asik gak asik, kadang asik kadang enggak, di situ yang asik katanya. Seperti orang main catur, kalau gak ngatur gak asik.
Just shifting now, just back to the 2019 presidential election. Mm-hmm. Although the Election Commission registration period has not begun yet. It begins, I think, August 4th to the 10th, where parties can submit their right, names for right. candidates. Although it's still a few months away, there's a lot of already informal campaigning going on to some extent, particularly towards the President Widodo as the incumbent. What type of issues do you expect to see used against candidates once the campaign season really begins, say, in September or so?
Right, right.
And which of these will have the biggest impact on, say, President Widodo and potentially on Prabowo Subianto if he actually declares his candidacy?
Because it is very different from 2014 elections in terms of that we now have an incumbent president, right? Because we have incumbent, then the main issues will be centered around the incumbent. And until today, I think there are two main issues that are related to incumbents. Number one is his performance, both in terms of economy, and other things, meaning that his approval ratings, the people's evaluation on the economy, the people's evaluation on his performance in many programs and sectors of the government will be very significantly affecting the competition. If Joko Widodo can maintain his high approval ratings, if he can maintain a stable economy and stable political condition, then there is high possibility him getting re-elected. So to reduce this possibility, his possibility of getting re-elected, then of course the opponent will also focus on his performance, right? And of course the focus will be on the negative things, on the performance. For instance, on the economic issues, there will be very harsh critic on the signature program of the president, the infrastructure project. I think the main critic on this project is on how they fund this project. It is a common understanding now that the infrastructure project, this massive infrastructure project, is funded through the loan from the foreign loans. The very high increase of this foreign loan that we have now will be a weak point, the president, according to the opposition. And there are some other program and performance issues that can be targeted by the opponent. So those issues are still very usual issues in politics, right? But there is another issue which also be played out. That is the issue that is related to the fear and the feeling of the people against the president, and also some accusations that has been around targeted toward the president, including the kind of identity politics type of issues. I think there are at least three issues that will be played out in this category. Number one is the accusation that the president is actually a communist.
Jangan sampai kita diadu domba, dipecah belah, gara-gara pesta demokrasi, masyarakat diadu-adu. Itulah kadang-kadang jahatnya politik di situ, difitnah, diadu domba, masyarakat dipengaruhi. Coba saya saja, di bawah banyak yang diisukan, itu Pak Jokowi itu PKI, banyak yang seperti itu coba. Padahal PKI dibubarkan tuh tahun 65, lucu banget kan, itu yang menfitnah itu ngawur.
That was the voice of President Widodo in March this year, responding to accusations that he is a communist. He said, quote, "Don't let us get to the point where we have a conflict among ourselves or become divided because of democracy. Sometimes that is the evil part of politics. People use slander, create conflicts, and society becomes affected. Take me, for example. People have created a lot of rumors and say things that Jokowi is a communist. Some people are saying that, despite the fact that the Communist Party was banned in 1965, unquote.
I think this will be played out again and again in 2019.
And that was, excuse me, but that was also used in 2014 to some extent.
Okay. Yeah, but you see until today it is still being played out.
Yep.
Number two will be that the president is not close enough to the Islamic groups.
Mm-hmm. Which was also used to some extent in
2014, yeah. But it is still played out until today. Of course, when we are talking about the effectiveness, it is another issue, right? Number three is the suspicion that is that is portrayed to the president that he's actually very close to China. And the issue of the foreign labor that is very, very, very highly or heatedly debated now, I think it's only a front issue. The real issue is actually the opponent of the president is trying to portray him as the one who is very close to China. His presidency will benefit China very much and will put Indonesians in general into suffer. I think those three issues will be played out again. But I think as long as the president's performance is high enough, very good, and the people can understand that, I think it is difficult now to put those three issues into highly or significantly impact his possibility of being reelected.
We look forward to seeing your next survey later, sure. In a week or two, to really see what the numbers are, to see what the approval rating is, and how he competes with other with other candidates. How many camps do you think could be running in the 2019 election? People talk of Widodo against Prabowo. It's still not clearly defined. What's your take?
There are two things that determine how many camps we will have. Number one, as we know, the so-called presidential threshold. Because of the requirement of political party or the join of political parties to have at least 20% of seats in the parliament based on 2014 election, to nominate a pair of candidates for president and vice president, then we will have four at the most, right? That's number one. So if we just look at the number, the presidential threshold requirement, there is a possibility of having four camps. Now, second factor is the current dynamic of the coalition and opposition. If we look at the current dynamic of coalition-opposition, coalition means the political parties that are supporting the current president, and then the political parties that are supporting the opposition, right? We have two political parties in the opposition, and seven political parties are in the government. One political party is none, having no position, Democratic parties. If this current coalition is not shaken up, then we will have only two camps. In my opinion, what is happening? It seems that there is these two camps of coalition and oppositions are not shaken up that much. There is only one political party that is very soon to quit the coalition of Jokowi is a National Mandate Party. But the quit of this political party will not give enough seats for the current opposition to have another camp.
So they would need like PKS
is now in the opposition and they can be with Gerindra, so there is one camp. Let's say Democrat Party, the former president SBY, this party can make another coalition, but it will need at least two political parties to make one coalition. If only one political party quit from Jokowi's coalition, then there will not be enough.
Still not enough.
So far we have only two, but there is a possibility of having three. Now there is another, the last factor that affect these camps is there any alternative candidates other than the current president and his former opponent, Prabowo? All of the polls show that there are only two viable candidates, the current president and Prabowo. If there is another alternative, then there is a possibility of having more than two camps. But so far, that alternative, we don't see yet. So at this point, I would say that it is highly likely that we will have only two camps, Prabowo's camp and Jokowi's camp. With a big note that in Prabowo's camp, there is still a possibility of Prabowo not running. But the camp is still Prabowo's camp. But although it is highly likely to have only two camps, but there is still a possibility, although the chance is getting lower, to have the third coalitions. The third coalition will be determined by two things. Number one, if there are at least two political parties from Jokowi's coalition quit the election. Number two, if there is another presidential candidate alternative that can be found during the last 2 or 3 months before the registration for presidential candidate in early August.
Ya, yang namanya politik itu segalanya mungkin. Segalanya dimungkinkan. Jangan sekali-kali menutup sebuah opsi-opsi. Di dalam politik semuanya itu bisa mungkin.
That was the voice of President Widodo on the Najwa Shihab TV show, responding to the question on whether or not he is open to having the opposition leader Prabowo Subianto as his vice presidential running mate in 2019. The president said, "In politics, anything is possible, and all options are on the table. If something like this is good for the country, why not?" You mentioned that there's still a chance that Prabowo would not be running.
Yeah.
Do you see a chance of this talk of him maybe being attracted to the offer from the presidents?
Yeah. I think it is a very tempting offer, yeah. But I think the resistance from inside Jokowi's coalitions and from inside Prabowo's party will prevent that to happen. I see so far very strong resistance inside Gerindra party, political parties of Prabowo, to make Prabowo as the vice president candidate for Jokowi. And also there is a very strong resistance inside Jokowi's coalition.
What about Golkar? Golkar can't be too happy with
of course,
that type of
because
offer.
Golkar
they put so much hard work and investment into the president.
True. If Jokowi is going to take his vice presidential candidate from political party, then Golkar will be the first choice, right? So I think, although they said it's up to Jokowi, but I think Golkar will do anything to prevent Prabowo to be the vice president. But we'll see. But I think the strongest resistance to that is the resistance from inside Jokowi's coalition, especially on the supporters. And also the very strong resistance inside Gerindra party. Because they need two things. Number one, they don't want Prabowo to be the vice presidential candidate. Number one. It will be an embarrassment to them, right? Number two, they need Prabowo to stand as the candidate to make sure that the coattail effect of Prabowo can benefit Gerindra party to defend their seats now. So it's more fundamental. So I think given those two considerations, I think it will be very difficult to realize the expectation or the hope of Jokowi to be the presidential candidate and Prabowo as his running mate. Although, of course, in politics it is still possible, but I think the possibility is getting lower.
And just on that same point, so if you say that Prabowo doesn't run, they'll have a big impact on, say, his members of parliament who are running for re-election or election in 2019.
Right. Because why is that so? Because the people who vote for Gerindra is because of Prabowo. If we ask people, what do you think if we say Gerindra? They said Prabowo. So Prabowo is the brand of Gerindra party. If the brand is not running, then Gerindra party will be in trouble, right? That is the last choice to be taken for especially the member of parliament from Gerindra. They want to at least maintain the political support they got in 2014 in the 2019 elections.
And do you think, say, if Prabowo does run, do you think there's a chance that Gerindra could surpass Golkar in seats in the House?
Which would bring
them to number two slot.
Yeah, I think the polls number shows that possibility is there, but it's not certain because we find so far that sometimes Gerindra is in number two after PDIP, sometimes Golkar is still in number two, three. They change over time, so I think there is possibility of them of having very close. But it will also be depending on the capability of Golkar to align itself to Jokowi. If Golkar can be aligned with Jokowi to the extent that people think that Golkar is the second party of Jokowi, then the down ballot effect or the coattail effect of Jokowi to Golkar will be higher. That means it will be difficult for Gerindra to beat Golkar.
So Golkar will be using President Widodo's photo as much as possible.
Right. Yeah, and they are doing it now.
Yeah. How do you see the Democrats? Do you see them? I know you mentioned that they're still in between, but do you see them potentially leading towards the president's coalition?
Yeah, I think Democrats have, we have to see the interest of Democrats now. Democrat at least has two interests. Big interest. Number one, SBY in this case, the chairman, they need to put their cadre, the son of SBY, to be in the next national leaderships of Indonesia in 2024, right? That means they have to put 2019 to 2024 period as a consolidation for Agus Harimurti Yudhoyono to be the next part of the national leadership. To support this interest, they need to be aligned with political force that is going to win in 2019 elections, right? And for now, based on the data, the possibility of being that winner is on Jokowi's side, on the current president's side. So that is the first interest that they have. The second interest that they have is to maintain the legislative support or electoral vote that they got for the political parties. To do so, they need somebody to be the icon of political parties, to be seen by the public. It can no longer be SBY, because people know SBY is not the next leadership and so on and so forth. That means they have to put Agus Harimurti at least on the national spotlight of 2019 elections. Mm-hmm. Good national spotlight. That means
coordinating minister with a minister position, yes, besides VP.
Yes.
A ministerial level would be good enough.
Will be good. But for that, they need to campaign with the one who can get a national spotlight. That means that possibility is again on the side of Joko Widodo. Mm-hmm. So I think based on that, the data that we have now and the interest of Democrat Party, SBY Party, then I think rationally speaking, they will align more with the current president compared to Prabowo president. But dynamic can change if Prabowo doesn't run. For instance, Prabowo doesn't run, then he will ask somebody else, let's say Anies Baswedan, to be the presidential candidate. Then if this candidate is offering Democrat Party to be the running mate, for instance, then it is worth trying for them. At least they can put their leaders, Agus Harimurti in this case, at the national spotlight, as the vice presidential candidate. At the same time, because he is the vice presidential candidate, then he becomes the icon of the political parties, then political parties can get more support from the public. So that is the dynamic. So
wow, it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be important to watch the developments from now until early August 4th.
So the development of this coming 1.5 until 2 months, until August 4 to 10, will be very important. And it can be a determining situation for all of these political players.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Dr. Jayadi, we look forward to your next survey from SMRC. And I think I'll do a whole podcast episode just explaining the survey results. I'm mm-hmm. sure they're going to be very, sure, very interesting. Sure. Mm-hmm. So I think our listeners should visit your website, which mm-hmm. is saifulmujani.com. That's SAIFULMUJNI.com. Also, you should follow SMRC on Twitter. It's at Saiful Mujani. And also, maybe you can follow Dr. Jayadi's Twitter, which is at Jayadi72Hanan. Mm-hmm. Dr. Jayadi, thank you for being on this episode, and thank you for your mm-hmm. time and your very interesting insights.
Thank you for the interview.
That concludes this episode that was absolutely packed with invaluable information from Dr. Jayadi about the 2018 elections, political party coalitions, and all the political maneuvers, as well as the layout for the 2019 presidential election. Indonesian politics and its impact to the business community and society are complex, as you have just learned from hearing Dr. Jayadi's insights. I realize that some of the topics we covered were super technical and may have been overwhelming to some listeners that don't follow Indonesian developments that closely. With that said, all of these topics are critical to understanding Indonesian politics and its impacts. If you have any questions or need any further explanations on any of these topics that we discussed, just send us an email at info@indonesiaindepth.com. That's Indonesia In Depth, one word. And we will respond and try to assist. If I can't provide an answer, I can always tap the wealth of knowledge of my colleagues at Lexico Indonesia Advisory. As a program note, by request, we have included all of the song titles and artist names in the description of each episode going forward, so you'll know the artists. We try and use a song that is relevant to each specific segment to make things more interesting. This is Sean Corrigan, and I'll be back soon with another episode with a very special guest. Thanks for listening.